Agun Lay versus Banks, case number 251994. And I understand, Mr. Rich, you're present?
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning again, Mr. Bellantoni.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Just give us a second. Please proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Rory Bellantoni. I represent the plaintiff appellants in this matter. This is another case with a slight variation that basically relies on the New York State Court of Appeals decision in Cruz. Again, the certified question went to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals answered the certified question as follows. We hold that the regulation, and this is the regulation that establishes a class size for students with certain needs, sets forth a list of mutually exclusive alternatives, and that a student's committee on special education, CSE, must therefore select the listed alternative that best meets a student's individual needs. We answer the certified question accordingly. In this case, the IHO correctly found that this student had highly intensive management needs and that this student required a high degree of individualized attention and intervention. And this came not only from the parents' witnesses, but the DOE's IEP itself. In the certified record at page 428, due to the extensive nature of his brain-based disability, which severely affects his physical and cognitive capabilities, in order to progress and not regress, student requires, and that was the student's name, I substituted student.
Counsel. You know, the Cruz issue, we've argued with you and we've heard before, and we'll look into it. For me, in this case, the major issue that I am not altogether clear on is the 60-minute versus 45 minutes. Why the two are deemed to be equivalent.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last one.
60 minutes versus 45-minute day, and that the government hasn't really answered your argument that giving this person the lesser time is all right. So I'd like you, if you don't mind, to focus a moment on that, and I'll want to hear the government's answer.
The IHO, Your Honor, found that it was mathematically impossible to give the student the services that he needed in a regular school day.
Yeah.
The DOE's position the position they had was if the student needs related services, we'll make sure the student gets related services. They did not say how they would make sure the student got those services during the school day. They didn't account for the movement of the student from class to class. If you raise the issue that therapy rooms are in a separate part of the building, the DOE will say, well, we can always push those services into the classroom. But it's not clear how they're going to do that if the equipment that you need is somewhere else. So
expanding on Judge Calabresi's question, to understand how this all added up in his IEP, the main special class requirement of his IEP was that for 35 times a week, he would meet for a period. And am I right in assuming, and is it your understanding, that that meant the 45-minute period that the school was that he, District 75 was divided into? Or did that mean a 60-minute period?
No,
or something else?
It would be 45 minutes or potentially less, because if the school day goes from 8:30 or 9 to 2:30, and there's lunch, when you start trying to divide that time, the periods that the student is supposed to get can end up even being shorter than 45 minutes.
Okay, so the 45 minutes includes transition time as well.
Potentially.
We can ask the city as well. But all the related services were to be provided in 60-minute periods, right?
They're supposed to be, yes.
And that was like 19 hours worth.
Correct.
Per week.
Which would be an additional 3 hours a day on top of the other classes, and all of a sudden you're going to 6 o'clock, and the student doesn't have an extended school day.
Could an extended school day be provided?
The short answer is yes. I don't know if they have the teachers, the setup, where the student was going to be to have an extended school day, but certainly can be provided. Sometimes they bring in outside agencies to provide a service in the building where the school is if there's nobody in the school to provide. So yes, that can happen.
So I also note that the IEP describes how the services are to be provided and where they are. And it refers to a separate location at provider's discretion, either classroom or therapy area in the school building. So who is the provider in that context, in your understanding?
Well, unless they bring in an outside agency, it would be the DOE.
The DOE is the
and
provider.
Whoever, you know, that related service, a therapist doing that work. But that's exactly one of the problems, and that is the
IEP. How much have you focused on the fact that they haven't told you how they can do that? I mean, in your argument below, because, you know, we are an appellate court. So how much, when you're talking to the district court, when you were talking to the thorough, did you focus on this as something that the state has not really made clear?
When you say how much, I can't quantify given the other issues, but we do focus on it, and in two ways. One is not only the mathematical impossibility, but the IEP is supposed to say how these services are going to be delivered. To allow the IEP to say, we can push out, we can bring it into the classroom, we can do other things, is not what an IEP is supposed to be.
The IEP, though, says that the provider's discretion. And I suppose that depending on how you understand the provider, it could be that all of this could have been provided on a push-in basis, right?
Sure, or not at all. Or this is the problem. An IEP is supposed to be a plan. Adhere to.
The IEP was inadequate?
Well, to the extent that you're not defining the service, who's going to provide it, where and for how long, then IEP can't be changed unless the committee reconvenes. To allow the related services to be at the district's discretion means 1 week it could be push-in, another week it can be taking the student out to go to another classroom. There's no certainty.
So excuse me for interrupting, but I understood that you were saying that this IEP just couldn't be satisfied at District 75, not that it was inadequately specific in these ways that we're discussing now.
When Judge Calabresi asked how much we press this position below, we typically raise both.
But the issue before us is, could this be done in that school?
I didn't hear the beginning, I'm sorry. In that school?
Could this be done in this school? What they said needed to be done, could it in fact be done there? Because that's the thing that, reading the whole thing, I'm left in problems with, and I believe Judge Carney is too.
And could it be done leads me back to mathematically impossible. And then again, we don't an IEP and evidence of how the district can implement it isn't supposed to be, you know, when we confront that issue, we'll deal with it in a certain way. The IEP is supposed to specify how the student is going to get these services, how long these classes are. And again, without an extended school day, with an hour for lunch, there's just no way to build in mathematically all of these services the student is mandated to get during a 35-hour...
But what I hear you arguing is something that I don't think you argued to the district court, which is that this IEP, as printed out and provided to us at PE 188 and 89, it's itself was lacking. But I don't think you argued that. I thought you were arguing more that it was impossible to achieve what the IEP directed.
We did. I was just trying to answer the question on how we typically address this below at the administrative hearings. And we typically raise both.
I don't think the question included typically, how you typically handle it. It's what did you do in this instance?
I understood it to mean what, how much is it pressed? And the mathematic issue is the one that we focused on.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Hannah Sorokin for the appellees.
Can you speak up a little bit, please?
Apologies. Hannah Sorokin for the appellees. I'll start with that related services issue. As the SRO explained in quite a bit of detail, there's no mathematical impossibility here. As the IEP set forth, the 60-minute related services are provided.
I have to interrupt because the SRO didn't say it was, it rejected the mathematically incapable argument, but it said was mathematically, it rejected it because a majority of the students recommended related services could have been accommodated by pushing into the classroom in the manner described. But it didn't really address whether all of the required related services could be provided, and if so, how that would happen. And so that puzzled me in the SRO decision, because on my review, it's difficult to understand how it would happen, except unless all of the related services were pushed into the classroom, ignoring that it should be a provider discretion where to provide those services. And if you did that on a 60-minute basis as opposed to dealing with the school's 45-minute basis. So maybe you can explain to me how it all could have been done.
Sure, Your Honor. And I think the IEP leaves open that the majority of these services are provided in a pushed-in fashion, and that was elaborated on by the interim principal here, explained that the assigned school uses a collaborative process, and that's where the special education teacher and the related services providers all work collaboratively to ensure that the full 60-minute sessions are provided for, and how that would look in
a
45...
So why did they say a majority? Why didn't they say all of them could be provided?
In the record, I think there's some discussion about, you know, in the instance where, for example, a DOE provider is not available, there's some conversation about what the sort of contingency plans are on that basis. So I understand that sort of decision is talking about that, and that context was...
Counsel, keep in mind that our job is to see whether the SRO's decision is full, proper, and not arbitrary. So explain to us how the SRO decision adequately met this issue. Your argument as to how it could have been met is all very interesting, but it isn't the issue before us, which is simply to review whether the SRO did its job.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I think the decision here did meet that standard. What the SRO rejected was the idea that was the focus here, that it was mathematically impossible. And what the record here and the SRO decision establish is that the DOE uses, in this assigned school, a collaborative model so that the remaining 15 minutes are pushed into the next class period. And there's the benefit of that, as the SRO acknowledged, is pushed-in services allow students to practice these skills that they're working on in a variety of different environments and contexts. And this is a model that iBrain uses as well. The record shows that they also use pushed-in services.
But would they all have had to be pushed in? Because, you know, the notion of the provider having discretion to choose where it was optimal in the class or in a different setting, in a special room, seemed to me an important part, potentially, of the IEP. So are you saying that that notion was preserved on the SRO's understanding of the discretion, that it wouldn't all have to be pushed in services?
Yes, Your Honor. And what the SRO described and the district court also discussed, the total related services here are 19 hours, or I believe actually 18. There's one monthly hour for the parent services. So 18 hours.
I thought it was 19 plus one. It would have been 20 because the assistive technology was the three times a week.
But the total hours of instruction period here is 30. So using a pushed-in model doesn't have to be every class, but using that model can accommodate all 19, 20 of those hours within the school week that are required. So it's still left to the provider's discretion, working collaboratively with the special education teacher. And that serves a benefit that the collaborators here, the service provider and the special education teacher, are best positioned to be able to determine what environment will support the student's need. Often that is the classroom environment and the...
So you're saying the discretion was preserved in your understanding, regardless of the period was the 45 minutes or somewhat less given the transitions. That was the period for the special class that he was entitled to and was supposed to get 35 hours a week, right?
Correct.
Right. And then the 19 hours of 60 minute periods of special or related services on top of that.
Correct. That a portion at times, all of them at the provider's discretion, or the 15 minutes can be pushed into that next classroom.
But that would have to happen, in fact, right? Regularly.
It wouldn't necessarily have to. Certainly not the whole period. But the record does discuss there's some alternative options that can happen if that isn't an option. But it still preserves the provider and the special education teacher's discretion and ability to work collaboratively to provide the full recommended amount of services in the IEP in a variety of environments and settings that best support the student's ability to receive those services.
I think everyone agrees that's the goal, but I have difficulty understanding how that would actually work unless everything was pushed in. And I was alarmed by the SRO saying it was a majority because looking at whether the SRO was fulfilling its obligation, it seemed to be satisfying itself with something less.
Something less than what was really required. And that's, for me, the issue. That is, did the SRO focus fully on what was required or not, and if it didn't, then can we say that what the SRO did was fine? Now, the issue ultimately also before us is, was this argued below? And that will come back to opposing counsel.
Correct, and our position would be that it wasn't. And also note that the record here, the interim school principal... And
what was argued below on this, from your point of view? You say this was not argued below.
The focus below was the mathematical impossibility, not the adequacy of the IEP, as Your Honor mentioned. And it's plainly not mathematically impossible. And also note
just so that I understand, the focus, this argument of mathematical impossibility, was what the SRO described as really speculative, given the testimony from the interim principal, the assistant principal, all of these people who were actually at the school. Is that correct?
Correct. And what the record here shows is the principal, and I believe the DOE school psychologist, all testified that DOE could fully implement this IEP using the model, the collaborative model, and a balance of pushed in, pulled out services. So that is all in the record that this could be done. And anything that the my colleague's argument here that it couldn't be or wouldn't be is impermissibly speculative to challenge the IEP here.
How do we assess that? In other words, how do we assess NSRO's determination that a claim about the capacity of the school here is speculative?
Looking here, the SRO in their decision broke down, as I discussed before, the hours of required services, how that would be implemented within the weekly hours of...
I guess you heard questions from my colleagues.
Yeah.
Not so speculative. So how do we assess that? Do we defer to the SRO's determination that a claim here by the plaintiff is speculative?
I think that the deference is warranted here because the SRO's decision is reasoned based on the record, the testimony that was provided, that DOE could implement all of these services, that there would still be the room for discretion, preserving the discretion of the providers, could implement all of the hours of related services. And so the I see my time is running short, so just to conclude, the SRO's decision here, based on the record, establishes that DOE could implement these services in the assigned school, and argument to contrary speculative.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honors.
Counsel.
May I ask you to address directly whether the argument that we have made was actually made to the court below? That is, whether the SRO's inadequacy, by talking about majority and so on, with respect to this was adequate, as against the simple mathematical one.
But whether we argued that in the district court?
Yes.
In the FOFD, it's in the appendix at page 26, what we basically argued in the district court was that the IHO got it right. And the IHO here, he talking about the public school is required to provide the student with...
Excuse me, just to focus, follow up on Judge Calabresi. So you're saying now that you argued that the IHO got it right, but the question, as I understood it, was did you take on, in the district court, the SRO's use of the phrase... a majority of the students' recommended services could be provided in the manner described. Did you bring that to the district court's attention?
I don't know whether we singled out the word majority, but the argument was that the services that their IEP says they're going to provide, they all can't be provided. So whether it's a majority or something less than all, that it's not sufficient. And if I can just read what the IHO referenced was 35 periods in special class instruction per week, in addition to occupational therapy for 60 minutes, five times per week, individual physical therapy, 60 minutes, five times per week, individual speech language therapy for 60 minutes, five times per week, and vision education services. I mean, if you're talking about 35 periods, 5 days, 7 periods a day, where are the other classes coming from? When counsel mentions that iBrain has push-in classes, iBrain also has an extended school day. The students get there between 8 and 8:30 and stay until 6. That's how mathematically those services can be done.
And I thought I understood counsel to say that an extended school day was an option in the District 75 school as well in certain circumstances.
It should be. I mean, that's part of the argument. Is there's no reason why they can't do it. Again, I don't know if in a particular school they have the right staff.
So at that point, doesn't your argument become speculative that the school district wouldn't actually be providing the IEP as opposed to incapable of, given what the IEP required?
I apologize. I'm not sure I see the difference, because if it's not speculative, if it's if the school literally cannot get, you know, 70 hours of instruction in a 40-hour week. I don't think there's anything speculative about their inability to, and that's, and again, this one isn't my argument. The IHO found as well. So I'm not trying to be creative. This is an argument, an IHO with the same special, you know, educational expertise found that what he actually said at the bottom of A26, the district failed to establish exactly how the public school would be able to provide such services, even as push-in services, if there's not enough time in its periods or school day to provide them. So apart from it being, you know, mathematically impossible, the IHO held the district to their burden of proof and said they have an IEP written, but they haven't, you know,
Your argument relies entirely on mathematical impossibility. And the SRO responds, well, it's not mathematically impossible. There may be some difficulties. And insofar as you are outlining some possibility that it is impossible, then it rejected that argument as speculative. Is that an accurate description?
Yes. And may I just address the class size issue briefly? This case is different than the others.
Looking for presiding judge.
Oh, go ahead.
this case is different than the others, Your Honor, because the second alternative here is not implicated. There was no finding that the student suffered from severe multiple disabilities. This student's disability was traumatic brain injury. Now, that doesn't trigger the six-student class, but what it does is it takes the severe multiple disabilities off the table that the SRO in Navarro, Carrillo, and in Cruz found that the student had severe multiple disabilities and the treatment, the word's right, consisted of primarily of habilitation and treatment. The New York State Court of Appeals, in answering your question, said that these are mutually exclusive choices, and where only one applies, that's the one you go with. Where two apply, then the CSE must use its educational expertise to determine which one is best suited for the client. But what the SRO didn't do here was address the IHO's arguments that highly intensive management needs were the needs that the student had. He required a high degree of individualized attention and intervention, and that's in the DOE's IEP itself. There was nothing anywhere. Now, the district court mentions multiple disabilities in the record at 222, but
yes,
222, Your Honor, is a it's a letter from a psychoeducational evaluation done before the IEP, which was done on March 30th. This report was March 9th of 2022. And the, you know, the phrase that he was referring to, the educational evaluator, it came from the prior year. And all he said with respect to that was he was referred for a mandated three-year reevaluation. Student is nonverbal, non-ambulatory. He has an educational classification of multiple disabilities, is what he says in the report.
Thank you so much.
Go ahead. Thank you.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you, Judge.
We'll reserve the decision.